Texas Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 3, Season 16. Are you all present? Are you all comfortable? Are you all correct? I'll pose that question to my esteemed colleagues. Ryan Champion, are you present and correct? Are you comfortable?
Well, I'm present. I don't know if I'm correct, but, I'm here and it's good to be back with everybody.
I know. One man who's always correct, of course, is Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, how are you doing? I'm definitely here. Again, maybe not correct.
I'm the man with the shortest trousers in the world, Jack Bennion. Hello.
Hello, Tony Simpson, and happy birthday to Trevor Agnew for last week in person, because we didn't get a chance to do that on last week's show.
No, we didn't. We didn't. Shame on us.
Well, we would have been early, so we're just late. It's not really any difference.
What penalties are there for being late, though, Jack? That's the question. That's the weighing up, whether you're early or whether you're late.
That's up to Trevor, isn't it?
I suppose it is, really.
It depends what way you go through the gate as well, doesn't it?
We're going to talk about that. Is it gate? Yeah, all right, we'll talk about gate. Should we do predictions? Should we even go there? Where we ended up? Should we do Jack Bennion's?
Well, we should just do Trevor Agnew's, really, because he's the only one who ever gets it right.
Okay, where was Trevor Agnew's?
Well, didn't you get it right?
Actually, Jack, yours wasn't bad. You started off where yours was Thierry Neuville, Oit Tanak, and Sébastien Ogier.
Yeah, it was a good effort.
So that's, you know, two out of three. I went with Oit Tanak, Thierry Neuville, and Elvin Evans. Standard. And did you text yours in, didn't you? That's what it was.
Right, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't invited.
You was invited. It just got a bit.
Trev was the snitch.
Yeah, Trev was the snitch. That's it. Predictions. Ryan Champion went Meek Tanak Evans. Meek Tanak Evans for Ryan Champion.
And in fairness, I did qualify it with "this will never happen," and it didn't.
Well, to be fair, yeah, the next message you sent to us all was "no chance that'll be correct." And Jack Bennion, for some reason, Trevor Agnew, where were yours? I can't. Did you text yours in? I think you did, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It was definitely the 1-2-3 at Happen, I'm sure, if I remember right.
I don't think it was, you know. I don't think it was.
It's right
Tanak,
every time,
Meek,
it?
Tanak, Meek, Neuville. There you go. So, out of all of us, in fairness, Jack Bennion was the closest by a long shot. Well done, Jack Bennion.
Well done.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, there you go. Before we talk about Rally Argentina, of course, that's why we're here this week. We should, of course, do some Gary Boyd facts, because we didn't do any last week. And to be fair, he sent in a bit of a cracker last week, and I didn't do it. So I'm going to read out last week's, albeit slightly timeline, because it was obviously Rally Argentina related. It was a Gary Boyd. Is Martin Holmes the GOAT of rally journalists? That's the question. Rally Trivia 79. Sebastian Loeb has won 79 WRC events. Journalist Martin Holmes turns 79 today. This was last week. In 1979, Rally Portugal, Andy Dawson, co-driven by Martin Holmes, finished fourth in a Datsun 160J. There you go. So that was the one for Argentina last week. And this week was Rally Stats. Argentina 2019 is the first time Thierry Neuville and Andreas Mikkelsen have been on the top two steps of a WRC podium together. Who'd have thought it? Boys?
I definitely didn't think.
I would have actually, in all seriousness, joking aside, I would have thought they would have been on a podium together before now. I really would. Anyway, boys, Rally Argentina. Jack, were you abreast of things? Were you doing stuff for Autosport on this?
I was mostly away from Rally Argentina, unfortunately, but I managed to catch up and do my best to keep in touch with what was going on via the usual WRC live method. So that was quite good to use that to keep up.
I know Ryan Champion was keenly watching WRC 2 Pro, wasn't you, Ryan Champion? You kept your finger on the pulse of that particular part of the championship.
Yeah, as always, you know, that's it's the first thing to look at, isn't it? Is a pro going to win? Is a non-pro an amateur? Who cares?
Yeah, and Trevor Agnew, you're just across everything all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, except for birthday weekends. It's a bit fuzzy at times.
Right, okay. So this is going to be a great review of Rally Argentina. I think you'll all agree. I've picked possibly the best people in the world to have at the beginning of our podcast with us. So there you go. By the way, a bit later on, we're doing a little bit on Safari. We've got Ian Duncan joining us a little bit later on, thanks to Ryan Champion.
Beaver.
Well, hang on a minute. This isn't a quiz, Jack. Come on, what was that?
Oh, Just, it was just that Ian Duncan is fever. That's I can't do that.
Yeah, so Ian Duncan joins us later on in the podcast. But this bit is all four of us talking about Rally Argentina. Obviously, we've already mentioned Gate. We'll come to that. I'm gonna do this in some kind of order. Right, Jack Benyon, I'm gonna come to you first. Were you slightly underwhelmed by Rally Argentina?
I don't know if I was slightly underwhelmed. It definitely wasn't the most exciting WRC round that I've watched in the last few years, I've got to say. I'd be interested to hear what my co-hosts think about this as well, because Argentina is usually, I don't know if it's just set the bar high in previous years, but obviously we had the Nerville Evans finish a few years ago, which was very exciting when Evans hit the gate, and it has seemed to produce some quite exciting rallies in recent times. But yeah, I kind of get the road you're going down, Tony. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't quite the most exciting one we've had in recent years anyway.
I, Ryan and I spoke about it briefly before we started recording this, Trev. It seemed to be relatively straightforward for Thierry. I appreciate there was 48 seconds between him and Andreas, obviously, the problems that Oit had, but he just didn't seem troubled at all, did he, Thierry, throughout the weekend?
I think he just made the least mistakes and seemed to have got that car working a lot better now, certainly the first 2 days anyway. I thought there was plenty of drama. There's some massive big accidents, wasn't there? And of course, Friday there was a lot happening. Friday, Saturday, I thought there was enough action there.
Okay, all right. Well, that's one out of two so far. Right, where are you with this?
Well, I think obviously the weather chucked a curveball in there, didn't it? Because we maybe expected to see, if it had been dry, there would have been some advantage to road order with people running further down the field. But actually, as it played out, with it been very wet and muddy at times, it played into the hands of Thierry Neuville, who was first on the road. But as Trevor just said, you know, he used that very well, kept out of trouble, and ended up with what looked like a comfortable win. But he kept out of trouble. He had the trouble-free run. And again, as we just alluded to, it's a bit of a turnaround of form for Hyundai, you know, with a nice lead in the Manufacturers' Championship now, whereas, you know, two or three rallies ago, we were saying that they were a little bit on the back foot, but certainly put in a great performance here. We saw Toyota with some unreliability, and we saw Sebastian Ogier all at sea with the Citroën, which we probably didn't expect, and, you know, that's not the first time this year.
Do you know what? But I'm going to go completely and utterly in a completely direction now with Sebastian Ogier, what you've just said. I'm going to say, right, this will be the rally and the point of the season where he's ground the result out, which I think will be the difference come the final round of the championship. And I still think he'll secure the WRC title this year.
Well, there's the gauntlet thrown down.
Honestly, I do. I think we spoke about it last week when the three, you know, you and I, Trevor, we were talking about Elvin. Unfortunately, it wasn't a great event for him. We'll talk about him in a second. But talking about what Sebastian Ogier did last year, perhaps driving around problems at times and things like that, and managed to get through and still managed to secure a championship.
It's a bit like 2 years ago, isn't it? It's a bit like the first year at M Sport where he couldn't quite get the car to his liking, and it has similarities to that. I just think that the competition are probably in a much better place than they were that year.
Yeah, listen, and you can put as many safety nets in for your statements as you like, Ryan Champion, but where are we going with this? Right, Jack, before we were rudely interrupted. Jack, where I was going with this is that I genuinely can't remember now where I was going with this. No, where I was going with this... This is what the difficult part in this photo was on. The way I was going with this is results like that, and where he was clearly all at sea, yet he still was on the podium and he still got maximum points and blew everybody completely and utterly out the water on the power stage.
Yeah, it's a typical trait of Sebastian Ogier, isn't it? He's very good at grinding out results when the car isn't perfect. Seen again today, he's been, well, there's a story on autosport.com and a story in Motorsport News about him pushing suspension, Citroën to improve suspension for the rest of the season. And this is kind of how the WRC season goes, isn't it? It starts off with, sort of post-Volkswagen for Sebastian Ogier anyway, since he was at M Sport and since he's been at Citroën, the season starts a little bit slowly with a couple of wins or one win, you know, a few good results, and then he starts, you know, asserting his voice on the team that he's driving for to say we need to pick things up and improve things. One thing I will say is Hyundai have had a fairly sort of under the radar start to the season. I was interested to read what Andre Adamo said about that Thierry Neuville was the man making the difference at the minute, and I think he's driving brilliantly so far this year. I think he's doing a similar thing to Sebastian Ogier. I don't think the Hyundai's the best package either. I think the Toyota is. But if you look at the championship, you know, the drivers doing the best job at the minute are at the top, and Wout Tanak's been a little bit unlucky, but a combination of making sure that their cars get to the finish and getting the best out of them has seen Thierry Neuville and Sebastian Ogier have the best start to the season.
I'm now looking for a life raft of Trevor Agnew to back me up on my point. Trevor Agnew, what's your thought?
Ogier is a class act, and you would never really mind. He's 10 points behind Neuville at the minute. And again, we saw another example where his class shone through in this rally. He said he was lucky, but I think it's just an expression that he threw out there. When he was on one wheel, he nailed it. You could hear the throttle go in. His reaction is just so much quicker than everybody else. You know, anybody who wins Monte Carlo the number of times. Same as Tommy Mäkinen, who was always called lucky. We had this debate with a few people on social media. It is talent. It's not luck all the time. You can't have that much luck. And that's what shines through, his consistency all the time, even in a bad car. Third day of the rally, the car wasn't working. He doesn't give up. He doesn't get frustrated. He cracks on with it. And he's always a favourite going into any season. He still is for me.
It seems an obvious go-to here. Is this why we're seeing such laboured and tricky results? I'm using the word tricky quite loosely there, Jack, but Lappy really just doesn't seem to be, he just seems completely all at sea. I wouldn't say out of his depth, but certainly it looks like he needs help, and you can't help but feel this is the time where probably Citroën probably do need that third car, as much as I feel like a broken record saying it.
Yeah, as much as anything, it's a third data point, isn't it? You know, the other teams have got three cars to read the data off, and possibly when other cars go out, they can experiment and do different things with the cars while they're out of contention. So, I think it's obvious that the third car is a massive benefit to the other teams. As far as Aspecca goes, I think he's just struggling with confidence, and we saw that through last season. Something clearly wasn't right where in the last season at Toyota there, and I think we're seeing a carryover of that, and it's one of the things we discussed when it was announced that Azarenka would be joining Citroën, and that was if the car wasn't 100% and firing all cylinders, then there's no doubt Sebastian Ogier would continually grind out results and make it look good. And someone like Azarenka, without that experience and without those world championships under his belt, would not be able to match that. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing Sebastian Ogier take that car to the next level. It's performing well above where it should be, probably in some cases. And Azarenka just can't quite take it to that level, or if he does, then he crashes trying to. So I think it's definitely a confidence thing, and I'm sure we'll see Azarenka bounce back at some point, but I think the car needs to be a little bit better for him to feel more confident in the car to be able to push more.
Right. Does it make it a double surprise when, and the benefit of hindsight, of course, which we've all got here at the moment, where Citroën did put all their eggs in one basket. We know that. And we can clearly, I can remember one particular stage end at the weekend where he's following, I think it was on day one, and he was following Chris's lines. I think he was behind Chris on the road, and he made reference to he wasn't prepared to put the car where Chris had put his car. I'm paraphrasing that, slightly, but that's ultimately what he was saying. Was it wise to put, if you're only running two cars, to have effectively a young driver that's only had one full season in your second car?
I think it's a difficult time for Lappy at the minute, and we saw that last year, didn't we? It's amazing, because 2 years ago he was the up and coming superstar. He had a great year, great first year with Toyota, and winning in Finland, and then last year just seemed to lose his way, as we talked about. And then we thought this year would be sort of reinvigorate him. He's alongside a multiple world champion who he can learn from, and things just aren't going his way. But this isn't just Azarenka Lappi that's been through this, is it? We've been talking about Andreas Mikkelsen in a similar way for the last few months, and he's just finished second in Argentina. So it can turn around very quickly. But
do you think? Sorry to interrupt, right? But do you think it leaves a young man exposed?
Well, I think as we just mentioned, he's lacking in confidence, and it's funny, isn't it? Whereas Lappi was the one Finn that you probably wouldn't have thought was quite so confidence driven. We see it with Teemu Suninen, we see it with Jari Matti, as we know. But you know, Lappi seemed to be, you know, he went to the circuit of Ireland for the first time and he was brilliant, and we just saw him as this natural talent, and somehow that's just, you know, it's just not shining through for him at the minute. So yeah, it's a difficult time because he's not got massive amounts of experience to draw on, like you said. But you know, it's important for him that he turns things around quite quickly, or important for the team, as you said, because there's only the two cars there.
Do you think, boys, and I'll come to you next, Trev, and I'd like to get your opinions on all this, you know, to use someone like Lappi as an example, and I'm not just kind of picking the scab, so to speak, because he's had such a tough event. But, you know, are we in the age now, Trev, and I'll say, I'll come to you first, where we've got perhaps young drivers, talented drivers, but perhaps not with, you know, the ability to perhaps have the confidence to make a change to a car, or indeed the knowledge to make a change to a car?
I think he was okay with that side of things. I think he, you know, his talent. I have a huge amount of empathy for EP, because he's such a talent. He's such a character as well. And whatever happened at Toyota, where he fell out of favour, whatever went wrong there, because he was blatantly quick in that car when he got into it at the start and went in Finland first time out. Whatever happened, and then this strange move to Citroën, and from Citroën's point of view to bring him in, you know, I just never understood.
No.
Jack. That they wouldn't have in Breen, or they wouldn't have in potentially Mads Osberg. So, you know, I'm with you. The bottom line is, apart from Sweden, he's got 7 points for him in five rallies. You know, and something needs to happen and change. So would Breen or Osberg have done better in that car this year? I personally believe they would, but I hope he finds his way, because he's just a supreme talent and a top bloke.
Jack, what's your take on it?
Going off what Trev says, you know, I'd have gone with Mads Osberg this year. I know Mads has not been proven to be a winning talent on all occasions, but he's usually a safe pair of hands who delivers strong results when the performance of the car is good.
Jack, sorry to interrupt. You know, and again, this is the playing devil's advocate a little bit. Would we not then give someone like Citroën a kicking for not giving, you know, this glass ceiling effect of young drivers not getting an opportunity?
Well, I wouldn't in that case, because if you're only running two cars and you need to guarantee that both of them are going to finish and, you know, the maximum is going to be extracted out of both of them, in signing Lappi, what you're doing is taking a gamble that, you know, he is going to be a world champion in the future, he is going to win rallies and he is going to be on the podium consistently. But signing him knowing that he's only got one full season of experience in the WRC is a big risk. And, you know, if you've only got two cars, you've got to put someone in that second car who's done all the rallies, has got many seasons experience of the WRC and has proven to be quick. It's the same thing that you get out of Danny Sordo. You know he's not going to win every event. You know he's not going to win probably any event now for the remainder of his career, unless things go, you know, perfectly, you know, his way. But, you know, he guarantees results, and he usually does get as close to the maximum out of the car as a normal driver would be able to. So, yeah, for me, I'm just building off what Trevor said. I was also surprised by them going with Lappi based on the fact that they've only got two cars. If they had three cars, then yeah, sign him up. But with the two cars, I was quite surprised by that, especially a driver struggling for confidence. And the only way this is going to turn around for EP is for him to find something with the car where he feels comfortable pushing, because that is the fundamental problem here. Whether you talk about the root cause being confidence or whatever you want to blame it on, whether he's not getting on with the team or whatever, the problem is when he starts a stage and all of that is you know, put aside, he doesn't feel comfortable pushing that car to the absolute maximum. And until he does feel that confidence to do that, then, you know, he's things aren't going to improve for him.
What I do find not surprising as such, but probably something I didn't realise, is that Citroën's lineup is the only fully fixed lineup for next season. Both Sebastian Ogier and Esker Pekka Lappi have both got contracts for 19 and for 20, whereas all the other teams, apart from Thierry Neuville, has also got a contract through to 21. All the other teams, all their contracts are up at the end of this year.
Is this going to be a new absolute rally record for speculating about who's going to be in what car next year?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we've got a nice story to start off, haven't we?
Well, and you, I was leading you by the hand, to be perfectly honest with you, Jack Benny, into MN's front page.
Yeah, the breaking news from David Evans that Malcolm Wilson has identified Oit Tanak as the person he wants to sign for M Sport. If you can't have Sebastian Ogier, then who else do you go for? It's got to be Oit Tanak, hasn't it, after last season?
Well, to be fair, my team, Everton Football Club, have identified Lionel Messi.
Do you know what? That is the perfect description of this story, in fairness. I'll give you that.
As a perfect target for them for next season.
You had to bring that up for Jack, didn't you, really? That's cool.
It was subtle. It was subtle, but it was all there, wasn't it? It was all there.
Cheers that, Tony.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, no problem
but just
at all.
Just going back to that situation, you know, like we were talking about with Lappy there, though, that maybe the interesting thing for Citroën is that they'd written off the Manufacturers' Championship because they only had two cars. They had Ogier in one car. Why not take a risk with a second car?
Yeah, fair dues.
I know they are hanging on in the Manufacturers' Championship, but realistically, they couldn't have expected to win it with two cars anyway, so maybe they were willing to take a risk.
But I think Jack's point's valid as well, right, in that if you've got two cars, you get extra data, especially if you go to an event like Chile, which is new.
Although, ironically, they are, what, somewhere in the region of 30 points ahead of M Sport. So... maybe the benefits of, mind you, M Sport only running two cars.
They've only run two cars as well, really, haven't they? So, yeah, difficult. And they haven't got Sebastian Ogier, so.
No. Well, just coming back to Rally Argentina before we start any more ridiculous speculation about driver lineups next year. I can't believe you did that, Jack Benyon. How soon did you start that? The Toyota, I'm blaming you. The Toyota lineup on Rally Argentina, to use the term that Trev used for Sebastian Ogier before, Jack, with Tanak's performance, despite the fact, obviously, you know, he ended up with a non-finish, as it were, I thought was completely and utterly outstanding also.
Yeah, he's getting to that Sebastian Ogier level, isn't he, really? I think he was when he was at M Sport. You know, we saw some results that didn't go his way, but we saw a few rallies where he could really take it to Sebastian Ogier, and we've not seen many teammates who can consistently mount a challenge to Sebastian Ogier. And I don't know if Wout Tannock was quite there in 2017. I don't think he was, but when things were going his way, he was definitely capable of challenging Sebastian Ogier. And the only time we've really seen that in the past was at Volkswagen, when Jari Mäkilä had the one rally per season where everything falls his way, and you know, like the Finland win in 2015, for example. But Ogier Tanak was fantastic over the weekend, and you can't really talk about him without really talking about that story, I don't think, because I just find it really interesting that Toyota can't quite seem to get this reliability sorted, and I just wonder how furious Ogier Tanak is getting with the fact that he should be at the front of the field. He's been winning rallies, he's more podiums, more stage wins than anybody else in the last two seasons, and yet he's still not won that championship, and he's still not anywhere near winning that championship if you look at the points at the minute. So it's going to be an interesting few months now to see how this plays out, I think.
Trev, you would think that come hell or high water, Tommy and the guys at Toyota Gazoo Racing will be basically ushering Ogier Tanak into a quiet room with a pad and just basically just pushing numbers in front of him until he says yes.
Fair enough. But yeah, of course, from Tanak's point of view, it'd be silly not to go and have a little bit of a nosy around the other teams and see what's on offer. Commercially, it's the right thing to do. And of course, Tommy's going to have to reassure him that they're going to sort the car out, because you can't have a championship challenge without consistency. Come back to Jack's word, and you know, you mentioned Messi, or somebody mentioned Messi earlier.
Stop talking about Messi, please, everybody.
It's killing me. It's valid. You watched the game last night. If you've got 40 goals a year for 10 years in a row, if you've got any other footballer who gives you 40 goals and performs the way Messi does in one year, you'd say he's outstanding. To do it 10 years in a row is just crazy. And that's what Loeb did, that's what Ogier is doing, and that's what the others have to do. It's a different course in motorsport in that the team has to provide a car that's consistent and reliable as well. And that's not coming together with the other teams apart from Ogier.
Although the irony behind all this, I think we will all agree, without shadow of a doubt, the best all-round car is the Toyota.
I don't think you can.
The fastest.
No? I don't think you can make that argument. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
If you're picking a car to start a rally, would you not always have in the back of your mind that the Toyota's proven itself to be a little bit fragile when it comes to, well, any event really, but you know, it's prone to.
All right, Jack, you've started something. Right, let's just park this for a second. Right. Right, I'm waving a magic wand, the absolute rally magic wand for you, Ryan Champion. You're going to do Rally GB this year in a 17 World Car. Which one?
I'll take a chance on my Toyota being reliable.
Okay, all right, okay, right. Let's stick with this. Trevor Agnew?
The car in front will be a Toyota and Rally GB.
Okay, all right, so that's 2 out of 4 so far. I'm gonna put my hand up and say Toyota, and then I'm going to come to you, Jack Benyon.
I'm going to say I shouldn't be allowed anywhere near a 2017 World Car. No one's stupid enough to make that decision.
It's the absolute rally magic
one. When you stood beside one last year, it shot into the hedge, remember?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I'm Mr. Sensible. I'll go with Hyundai.
Why a 2017 car? Why not a 2019 car?
Well, okay, it's 2017 rules package, isn't it?
It's just Ryan being obtuse. That's all it is.
And in fairness, Hyundai do have probably the nicest hospitality in it, Jack, so it's not...
Yep. Also true. They do break the one rule of motorsport that I hate, though, and that they have different coloured wheels on the front than they do on the back. I absolutely hate that.
That's a big word to say, Jack.
You've just done yourself out of a seat, Jack.
Yeah, I should say.
If I had a chance anyway.
Jack will never be seen in Hyundai hospitality again. There you go. I was just going back to Toyota. One man, of course, it was a massive achievement for Jari Mäkiläinen. 200 WRC starts, of course, now having that record, but very... I feel flat even saying it because that's such a big build up. And to talk about what happened in Argentina, right? It's just getting a bit Gary, isn't it now? Really, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, there was flashes, wasn't there, during the rally of him finding a little bit of form again. He was smiling again in the car and he was starting to enjoy it again. So, and ultimately he was, you know, very close to Chris Meek during the rally. So, and again, that in itself is a bit odd, isn't it, to say that, because Chris has been consistently faster than Jari Matti this year. But like I said, there was evidence of Jari Matti going a bit better there. So, let's hope that, because, you know, the championship loves him. He is a character, but he needs things to go his way. But it was good to see him smiling again.
Yeah, absolutely. Trev, what do you make of the animal? I think we all wanted him to get, even though we didn't put him in the predictions, it would have been a nice, we all love a nice little fairy tale, 200 starts. It would have been fantastic to at least see him on the podium, wouldn't it?
Yeah, what a wonderful career he's had. Like 200 times, he probably thinks at the start of a rally, I'm going to win this one. And yeah, we've said it all about Jari Matti. The consistency has never been there right the way through the season. And, you know, it's between him and the car. And for some reason, it doesn't work for him to sort of get in position early on to contend for a championship. So I don't know what else we can say. I think everybody knows about consistency. That's what he needs.
Jack, do you see him in WRC next year?
Yeah, I think he's, I don't know, I thought Argentina was almost the perfect cross-section of his entire career, wasn't it, really? It had a bit of everything that his career's had. There was flashes of pace, but ultimately he was only as fast as the second car in the team. Oitanek was streets ahead. You know, Jari ended up well over a minute off the win. So, I don't know, if it was me and I was looking at drivers to put in a car, he wouldn't be particularly high on my list, but I think if he's not at Toyota next year, I'd be very surprised, because Toyota love him. The Japanese fans out there, they love him, and especially if we've got a Rally Japan coming onto the calendar, I think Jari Matti will be a very important person for Toyota to keep on. So yeah, I think we'll see him in the WRC next year. And you know, like Trev said, you know, he's had a brilliant career, and he, you know, there are times where he's very quick, and if everything comes together perfectly, then he's very difficult to beat. So you know, there's a few rallies per year where, you know, he will excel and he'll do a very good job. So it'd be interesting to see that in itself, Tony, whether he is in the WRC next year, but I'm pretty sure he will be.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift crest, 86 right minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5-6 on lift crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Can I put this to all of you? And I'll do it in order of, because Jack's just spoken. I'll go to you first, Ryan, then you, Trev. Is there a period? Where is the line in the sand for a driver. Don't take this the wrong way, right? But you obviously had to make a decision at some point in your life, as Trev did, of that's it, that's enough. You know, we can't go any further. But at this level, is there a line in the sand now to say that, well, he's never going to be a world champion now?
Well, two things. You see, Trev as a co-driver gets to choose when he stops competing as a driver. You have to stop when the money runs out, don't you?
Yeah.
I would argue that.
It's difficult. So the question you're asking is, will Jari Matti ever become world champion? Is that
well,
your question?
Is there, you know, there's certain drivers now in the championship, and, you know, without, you know, because we've just been talking about Jari Matti, of course, you know, we all acknowledge the fact that I can remember, you know, I feel like a broken record because I've mentioned this several times, but I can remember him coming through. I was doing stuff with Penske when he first came over to see Penske, and, you know, he was the one out of him and Mikko that Penske said to me quite clearly at the time that he will be world champion. And, yeah, you know, that'll always stay with me. And, you know, I don't see it happening now. And you could almost look around the world championship, and, you know, I suppose Danny Sordo was probably put into that category, probably a few years ago. And, you know, to be fair, he had a bit of a renaissance last year. But, you know, taking part programs now, he's kind of, you know, acknowledged it himself almost, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. The difference between the two is what Trev just touched on, really. I mean, Danny Sordo is relatively consistent, isn't he? He's maybe not the fastest driver in the championship, but he's got consistency, whereas Jari Matti at times has been, you know, arguably one of the fastest, but just hasn't found that ongoing consistency. So, it's a shame. But, yeah, I think we can, you know, it's quite easy to see who are the potential world champions in the WRC at the minute. And there's no coincidence that it's the three guys fighting at the front. I mean, again, we'd all love to see Chris Meek included in that. He has the speed for it, but same thing, he's yet to prove season-long consistency. So at the minute, there's three drivers who are going to be the world champions for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Trev, just what Rice just said there with regards to you know, the three guys at the front. Three guys at the front have done a considerable amount of rallying, but they've not done 200 rallies, have they?
No, but they certainly seem to have learned, and they've got the consistent pace and consistently fast pace, I suppose, what you're saying. And you compare them to Danny, and I suppose Danny is the same. Danny can win stages, and he can get up there at the end of a leg and potentially lead rallies, and so I don't see Jari Matti being much faster and being in more contention for a championship. Clearly, Sordo only doesn't do all the rallies, but you'd be a very brave man to bet on Jari Matti at the start of the year over the last 14, 15 years that he's been doing.
Jack, if we can just finish off on this one, is that a bit of a disservice, do you think, to say that he's no longer in that category at the sharp end, or are we just speaking naturally over the results over the last few years? Because, of course, he did go into Toyota, I suppose, as the chosen one, wasn't he, in many ways? I think he did relish the fact that perhaps he was going to be a number one driver.
Yeah, I think for me, this sometimes happens in sports where there's an affinity from the fans and the people involved to that person, and maybe his ability or his performances are sort of elevated a little bit above where they actually are. And, you know, for me, Jari Matti Latvala has not been in World Rally Championship contention for a long time. And, you know, we saw that when he was battling with Sebastian Ogier at Volkswagen. It was clear Sebastian Ogier was heads and shoulders ahead. Jari Matti is only in contention when everything comes together perfectly on a weekend. And Sebastian Ogier has made a career out of the exact opposite. He gets his points when things are going terribly and when things are not working for him. That's why he wins world championships. So, you know, for me, I think Jari Matti Latvala has got about 40 more starts than Danny Sordo in the WRC and has 20 more podiums. So, you know, Jari Matti Latvala has got a lot more wins. Danny Sordo has got, you know, probably a better podium percentage than Jari Matti Latvala or there and thereabouts. So for me, neither of them are going to win the championship. So I'll take the one who gets the most podiums and scores the most points.
Good man. I think it's fair to say, Trev, not a great weekend at the office for the M Sport boys, unfortunately. That rock that Elvin hit, it was a hell of a hit, and I'm just glad it kept moving, that rock, to be honest with you, because I wouldn't have liked to have had that rock as an immovable object, because if we would have hit that and not stopped, the energy that would have went through the car would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, it rolled away. Thankfully, it's a sudden stop, so everyone's hurt. But I don't think the speed was massively high at that point. But yeah, he was in sixth, I think, at the time, wasn't he, Alvin? And between the two of them, they didn't really show their pace in this rally up to that point. Certainly created a headache for the team. We touched on this last week. But they seem to have got organised. I think they've finally got the cars re-prepped. They're going to have a couple of days off now. So, back into Chile, a new event for everybody, which I'm sure we'll talk about next week. And that gives him a chance. I think he's off on his mountain bike at the minute, Elvin and Scotty. They're up in the Andes somewhere. So that'll get him a chance to refocus and get going again. I think Marco is with him as well, isn't he?
I think so. Right, again, it's a reset button hitting exercise for M Sport, isn't it? As Trev's just said, cars are re-prepped, a few days off for the guys, not only for the drivers and co-drivers, of course, but for the team. Everything gets to Chile and they start building new event, new pace notes. Everyone's on a clean sheet of paper.
Yeah, and as Trev just said, you know, it's been a lot of work for M Sport, for all the teams, but particularly M Sport to repair that car. And good updates from M Sport and from Rich on social media, you know, showing the progress as it's gone along. They stayed in Carlos Paz and got the cars re-prepared there and then moved on to Chile. But tough rally for them. They've got to bounce back, but. You know, it's exciting going into a brand new event, isn't it? Because clearly nobody knows it. Nobody tested there. And, you know, it's the great unknown, which is it always throws up something interesting.
Absolutely. Listen, before we move on, we should probably give kudos, I suppose, to Andreas, I think, before we move on from other bits and pieces. Andreas was pretty steady. And I think, Jack, we should agree, kind of just picked his way through and picked up a really good solid result.
Yeah, very, very sensible. Obviously, coming back into the team after being dropped, so that's always difficult. You know, we've seen that with other drivers before, and people have struggled when they've had that kind of psychological blow to come back into the team. But he rocked up. You know, there's never been any doubt about his pace. I think there's a lot of similarities between him and Jari Matalatpro, actually, as drivers, and in terms of their results and things like that. If you look back through their career, they're like that second level, aren't they? They're not quite Thierry Neuville, Sébastien Ogier, Wout van Aert, but they're in that next class. And for me, Andreas Mikkelsen he's definitely had a lot of bad luck, but you can't blame everything on bad luck, and there's been some bad performances and some silly mistakes over the past 12 months. So it was a difficult decision for Hyundai to drop him, but he's rebounded in the perfect possible way. We knew that car was good. Thierry Neuville displayed that over the weekend, and Andreas Mikkelsen made sure that, you know, he wasn't making himself look bad by not delivering that result with a car that was good enough to do it.
Trev, we spoke about it last week and we said that Andreas was relishing this event. He's gone well there before. The surface seems to suit him. So in many ways, it was a perfect event for him to come back and really re-establish himself, I suppose, as a podium finisher in WRC, and of course put himself at the forefront of Hyundai management.
Yeah, it's good to see that they got a 1-2 in the rally and supported Thierry. The manufacturer side of things. Is it a mental thing? You know, he knew going into the rally that he enjoyed the stages and the conditions, and he thought it would suit his drive and etc. And if he can get his head into gear in Chile and go with that attitude, where, you know, let's get in, let's just drive the car and we'll see where we are.
Right, we did, of course. You went with us at the top of the program last week. Andreas did need that result, didn't he? And you can't help but feel that. If you got another result like that, all of a sudden all things could be forgotten, because he could be a real asset to Neuville's, you know, championship charge. Because we spoke about this last season about good number twos, so to speak, not to use a better phrase, but good second drivers to back up the, you know, taking points off other drivers.
Yeah, well, that's the key thing, isn't it, with Hyundai. They have their championship title aspirations with Thierry Neuville. He's definitely the focus of that attention. And, you know, they need the support. They desperately want to win a manufacturer's championship. I mean, let's not been any doubt, Hyundai have put huge money into the WRC, huge resources, and they need a title. You know, they would love to win a manufacturer title. So they don't just want a driver's title. They want support from behind. And obviously they've got a, well, almost an embarrassment of riches, if you like, in the team in terms of drivers. And it's almost become a little bit of an event in itself that announcing the driver lineup for each round. Because obviously we're seeing, you know, we've seen Sebastian Loeb doing several rounds now, maybe more than we thought initially. And, you know, so they're announcing the drivers each time. So, you know, they've got great infrastructure, great resources. They need a championship and they need, you know, Andres to do the team game, which he did perfectly in Argentina.
Right, boys, before we get to any other business, we do need to address Gategate. I'm going to come to the former professional co-driver with WRC experience, of course, Trevor Agnew. Gategate, what was your take on it and what would you advise a driver to do?
Well, wasn't it a storm on social media as well? It got a lot of people very head up, didn't it? Yeah, we've seen that happen before. The one I remember is John Lyons and on the Manx rally. I think he was driving for Polsky at the time and he took a shortcut around Sarkfield Hairpin and got excluded from the rally, got thrown out because of it. Same sort of thing, but yeah, it's one of those. Should the gate have been taped up in the first pass of it, if that's the way it was on the recce, on the spur of the moment, having negotiated a forward and you see it and you take a dive for it, and a driver's natural instinct is to take the shortest route. The co-driver, if it was keep left, would have called keep left, and whether the driver did or not, I don't know, but it was certainly a big storm in the teacup. And the teacup, Ogier got distracted by it, but he still made a mistake. For me, I would have just taken it and let's go, you know. And I don't think it was protests. A lot of people talking about protests, and I think it was maybe Ford and Citroën had mentioned to the organizers, so maybe that's the same thing. But yeah, 10 seconds, take it and go.
Right. I've watched it back a couple of times, the onboards of it, and your eye does want to make you go right, doesn't it? I don't know whether you've watched it a couple of times or whether you've seen it at all yet, but your eye wants to make you go. And naturally, the way the car comes through, you would naturally want to let the car run out and go through on the right-hand side of the post.
Yeah, but if you've wrecked it, right, and ultimately you're driving to your pace notes, but as Trevor said, you know, as a driver, as you know, you always want to take the shortest route. It's happened, you know, it's happened dozens of times over the years, particularly on hairpins where there's been a triangle and maybe it was meant to be the long way and people have cut through the short way or whatever. I mean, funnily enough, I remember that clip you were talking about, Trevor, on the Manx, but I think the rule on British rallies was, you know, the junctions were arrowed, and if you didn't go through the arrows, then you'd gone off route, and it was as simple as that. Whereas, obviously, most overseas rallies don't arrow the junctions in the same way as what we do. But yeah, like I said, drivers always try and get an advantage. I think in years gone by, it would have probably just you know, nobody would have said anything, or obviously there wouldn't have been the evidence. But now, every single part of the rally, as we know, is dissected, and you know, everybody has access to everything, so there's just no escape. And you know, we do see penalties like this that in the past I just simply don't think would have happened.
Jack, do you guys love stuff like this at kind of Autosport, MN and things like that? You know, there's a little bit of controversy, as Trev mentioned before. You know, there was a lot of there was a lot of people kind of fired up about it on social media. What do you make of it? Have we lost Jack?
I'm still here, sorry.
That's okay, all right. Welcome back, Jack.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think obviously the media like a bit of controversy. That's never something the media hides away from. For me, kind of what Ryan says, really, I think this kind of thing happens quite frequently. I think it happens quite a lot on national events. I think it's just that, as Ryan perfectly pointed out, the amount of TV coverage and things we get now just means that no one can hide from anything, and you know, the guys have to be careful when they finish the stage what they're saying, and I've even seen some of them start to cover their mouth now to avoid being sort of lip read like football managers do on football games and things like that. So the increased media coverage of the WRC is great for the fans and things like that, but it's not so good for the drivers trying to get away with mistakes and things like that.
Boys, a couple of things. I just want to do a little bit of tidy up on. I don't know whether you kept your eye on this one at all. Obviously, it was the Pirelli rally last weekend. Jack and I spoke about it, I think briefly, as we did, Trev. Reduced mileage, lacked in numbers, but certainly didn't lack in quality at the front of the field. And unfortunately, the result was kind of, it was a foregone conclusion with two punctures for Matt Edwards and a really good finish, Jack, for Tom Cave.
Yeah, it means he moves ahead in the championship now and on drop scores anyway, because he's had two wins and Matt Edwards has had a first and a second. Matt effectively drops a score because of two punctures that he had in the killer Kielder. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting finish of the season between those two. One thing I will say just very quickly is while we were on a break with Absolute Rally, we had I think it was in the break anyway, just after the West Cork Rally, we had a few onboards come up from Matt Edwards and Tom Cave, and they're well worth going back to watch, because I think I shared one with Ryan at one point. We were chatting about the pace that the two of them are showing, because you know, it's easy to write off the British Rally Championship and maybe, you know, Matt's not gone above the level that he's at now, and you know, we've seen Tom maybe not be as successful as he possibly could have been in various championships he's done in WRC, but the pace that those two were at in West Cork was absolutely phenomenal, and it also shows how quick Craig Breen was going as well, because he was ahead of both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just a quick tip of the hat, of course, to Oliver Solberg, first win for Subaru USA, out there with the family and everything else. We are going to have Oliver joining us probably in a week or two's time now, all being well. And congratulations to them. Congratulations to Subaru USA. And as I say, we'll talk more and we'll get more about that program over the next few weeks as well. So, boys, have you done any other business this week?
Yep.
Yes.
I'm impressed. Okay. Well, as Trevor answered first, Trevor Agnew, you got any other business for this week?
My any other business came up from Facebook this morning. It was an appeal by a guy called Emmett Sherry about someone in Ireland who spent the winter building a rally car, and he went out on the Monaghan Stages, which is a round of the National Championship, first event in the car. He ran over another competitor's exhaust and had fallen off. It ripped a hole in his petrol tank and the car burst into flames and burnt out. It looks like a Peugeot 205, as I can see. His name's Ryan, but it's not you, is it?
No, it wasn't me. I think my 205 is still all right, but I haven't seen
his surname here, but it's definitely not Ryan Champion anyway. But the good news around it is this Facebook campaign launched a GoFundMe campaign. And in the space of 4 hours, the rallying community's come together and they've gathered up over €6,000, I'll just look at it now, to help him rebuild his car.
Wow. Fair play. I've seen similar things in the past as well, but good on everybody who's got involved with that. And Trev, share it about anyway, if we can share it, and anybody wants to get involved, obviously you can get in touch with that young man. Ryan Champion, you're any of the business for this week?
A couple of things. Last weekend was the first victory for an R4 car. We've touched on this a few times. So the Orica R4 car took a win in South Africa, the Rally of South Africa, in fact. And then this weekend is the Rally of the Canaries, the next round of the European Rally Championship. So great that Chris Ingram's back out in ERC. Chris, as we know, has been fighting for budget. He's been struggling to get to the Canaries, but he's there. He's starting car number two, so good luck to Chris this weekend. Hope everything goes well for him. Funny enough, a little bit further down the entry list, I've seen him, the name of Chevy Pons. Some people remember him from WRC, yeah. Sometime factory driver for Subaru, and obviously drove for Citroën, the Kronos Citroën team, and the Mitsubishi WRCs as well. But that, you know, that rally has real history in the European Championship. It was used to be called El Corte Inglés. It was always a coefficient 20 round of the championship, and you know, it's been won by the likes of Liatti and Tabaton. It was actually won for 5 years in succession by a young man called Carlos Sainz before he made his world championship debut. And all the way back in 1984, it was won by a guy called Terry Kirby in a Nissan 240 RS.
There you go. Jack Benging, you're any other business this week, please?
I went along the lines of the Pirelli rally, and I don't think Ryan did this one, but I'm sure he'll remember it as the 1994 Pirelli International Rally 25 years ago. Do you remember it, Ryan?
I do. My first one was 95, but this...
It, There we go, 1 year after. So significant because Malcolm Wilson won it in the Michelin Pilot Ford Escort Cosworth, which is easily one of the best rally liveries of all time, as far as I'm concerned. Destroyed the field by almost 3 minutes and beat Stephen Finlay to the victory. But there was a very strong performance in third from Johnny Milner in a Group N Escort Cosworth, which was very impressive. Obviously went on to do big things. Austin McHale came fourth in a Celica GT4. And fifth place was easily one of my favourite random rally appearances of all time, Jimmy McRae in an Opel Calibra Turbo, the Calibra being one of my favourite motorsport cars, sadly enough, because I'm a big German touring car fan. And there was an Opel
Calibra. Who prepared a jack banging?
Oh, I don't know, go on, tell me.
Right,
the number plate's MSD, so yeah. I can make a guess.
So that's your answer.
Yeah, okay.
Nicky Beach co-driving Jimmy McRae on that occasion. And to round out a brilliant top six, Martin Rowe was also in a Group N Escort Cosworth. So some big performances on that rally in Group N Escort Cosworths by drivers who were going to go on to do big things. And in the F2 class, Tommy McKinnon, David Llewellyn and Alistair McRae. So some absolutely blockbusting names on that rally 25 years ago, and thanks to EWRC for publishing its results so that we can go back through and remember some of those performances.
What would we do without EWRC? Bless them. We would love to get the guys on behind that. I've tried this so many times, but still, there you go. My end of the business is just remembering something popped up on the timeline, and there's very few names that you can say that instantly take you to a car manufacturer, and without shadow of a doubt, if you say Possum Born, you will think of a Subaru. And I defy anybody to think any other manufacturer if you say Possum Born. 16 years, it wasn't since he passed a couple of days ago. And I went down that rabbit hole of just checking stuff out on YouTube and things like that. And just awesome driver. And just one of those things. Hayden Padden put something out about the inspiration that he gave Hayden as well. And yeah, it's just, again, boys, I don't think you'll agree, and I'll come to the obvious one, Ryan, this one. There's very few names that you can say and you get a manufacturer straight away, and Possum Born's definitely one of them.
It definitely is, because like you said, inherently, most drivers change manufacturers during their career, you know, to better themselves or whatever. But as you said, Possum Born, you know, synonymous with Subaru, and it's interesting. We just mentioned Tommy McKinnon there on the Pirelli rally. Of course, he won all his championships for Mitsubishi, then he went to Subaru, and ironically now he's known for Toyota. But Possum Born, he really was as you've just said about Hayden, he was an inspiration for the whole of the Asia Pacific area to get into world rallying, really. And obviously he had some great results with the factory Subaru team as well as in Australia and New Zealand.
There you go. There you go. Boys, that is the end of this section for this week. Thank you for all coming on and keeping it together, so to speak. Jack Benyon, you can trundle off now.
I know you're
a man in demand. Trevor Agnew, thank you for your time. We will catch up very soon. Ryan Champion, we will catch up next week. Folks, keep sending in your answers, by the way, for the Kielder competition. We've got some right ones, we've got some wrong ones. We will be giving out the mugs towards the end of the season. Dan, we the Terrors, is already working on the design. You know they're going to be great as well, don't you? So boys, see you all next week, okay?
Thank you very much. See you next week.
And thanks, folks. We will be back same time, same place in the podcast hall next week, but we've got a cracking piece coming up just after this break now with Ian Duncan.
This is Absolute Rally with Kielder. Whether it's the car, the service, the tools, the mechanics matter.
There's 15 more seconds to fill.
That's it, Tony. Car sounds?
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And the word legend's thrown around quite a bit, but I think we've got one with us right now. Very, very apt as well, Ryan Champion. I think you'll agree what we've been talking about with regards to Safari Rally with our guest we're just about to introduce.
Yeah, fantastic to have a real hero of the the true Safari Rally with us, Ian Duncan. Always nice to welcome a winner of a World Championship Rally to the show. Fantastic history you've had with the Safari Rally, but tell us a little bit more. How did it all start for you?
Thanks, guys. Hi. Okay, it was likewise a dream because we grew up going watching it every Easter. You know, it was a big Easter thing. So my parents would help sometimes, and otherwise we'd just go and watch. And so from when I was really young, then we used to watch it and go to the start and all those kind of things. And then so it's something I always wanted to do. And then finally, I think in 1983, we managed to do our first safari.
And then it evolved pretty quickly for you, didn't it? I mean, you drove some private cars, and then your first official car really came with Subaru, didn't it? Your official drive.
Yeah, it took a while. We had a few bad years, and then we got the first RX Leone. I think was in 88 or something, something like that.
But through Subaru, I guess that brought you into contact with Toyota, or you became known to Toyota, and obviously that's where much of your success came. How did that first introduction go about?
We were doing the local rally championship sponsored by AVA, which was Associated Vehicle Assemblers. Peter Hughes was a great family friend and like a mentor to me. So they used to help us with whatever car we had. Then we started rallying a Toyota Corolla. We had one of those 2TG, 1600 twin cam engines, and then got help from Toyota Kenya. And then between Toyota Kenya and AVA, they did a deal with Toyota Team Europe, but we got the recce car or practice car to do, I think it was 92 Safari or something, with 91 or 92 with that car, and then it was working quite well, and then but we had a shock absorber issue and fell back, but for a while we were like in front of all their other cars, so that got the attention that we needed, which was quite good.
And then you went on to really a fantastic run of, I think, 5 years in a row you were on the podium of the Safari Rally, which is just incredible. But tell us what it was like to be part of that Toyota Team Europe setup at that time, because they put a massive amount of resource into the Safari Rally, didn't they?
Oh, just a crazy, crazy amount. I mean, it was just an experience that you'd never find again. They'd come do like a month's testing, or say 2-3 weeks testing, like early on in the year, and then maybe even 2 weeks filming. So we did quite a lot of filming, and then they'd come for the safari with a big attack. So masses of cars and people, and Toyota Lancia were very, very strong, and Mitsubishi was like a limited amount in those days. Otherwise, they were really the only true works teams left.
But it was hugely important to Toyota, wasn't it? Particularly to the Japanese.
Yeah, very, very, yeah.
And like we said, you started a run of podiums in 93, but I mean that must have been an incredible feeling to win your home round of the World Rally Championship in 1994.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, we partied for I think a month.
And you know, an incredible to have teammates like Didier Auriol and Juha Kankkonen as well.
Yeah. I mean, luckily they had a few issues. Kankkonen had quite a nasty crash, but then that was part of Safari, you know. So, and
just how much time were you putting into it personally? You know, how much testing did you get to do? How many times would you have done the route in those days?
Okay, like in those days, we probably went around the route like 2-3 times or something. But we do like I do all the testing, and even if I wasn't driving, I did look a very lot of the driving. So sometimes Kankkonen or Marco Elena or whoever would come out and do a bit, but then like I did like 90% or 99%, and now, that could be like weeks at a time, and you know, but yeah, I mean, some of it was quite hard, but it was also great fun. And then you're just driving for free. It's great.
And you know, but you were getting the results as well. I mean, that's the thing. Over that, like I said, that 5 year period, you know, you took podiums every year. I mean, it's always been the toughest round of the World Rally Championship. It certainly was in those days. What was the secret for you, do you think, to just get good results every year?
Okay, a great team, a great car. They really put an effort and would make it strong. Like, no matter what it took, they would make an effort to make it stronger and stronger. And then just not being crazy, just being more consistent than speed. You know, and then just, yeah, then just going for it.
But like you said, going for it, but also, I mean, that's the thing about Safari, it's knowing where to go slowly as well, isn't it?
Yeah. You have to keep the car in one piece and, you know, not even get punctures. You know, if you run the suspension a bit softer, then you got a bit less punctures, and then, you know, it was a bit easier on the car. So it wasn't just go for things that were like, you know, like if you lost a few seconds here and there, it didn't really matter. You know, you'd go for reliability and that kind of thing. But they had some great guys at Toyota, like some really nice engineers and team guys. And yeah, we had some good times, that was for sure.
And I think it could have even been the year you won it, was it, where TT also flew in the Trabant?
They did that one year, that's for sure. Yeah. They put a big effort into Safari. It was a lot of money and a big effort, and yeah, it paid off for them. So
and those famous pictures of you know, of all the team, of all the vans, all the equipment, all the people, all the cars. I mean, it was a massive infrastructure, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, but it's like every other sport. It grows. They spend more and more money, and then it gets too expensive, and they pull out.
Is that them pulling out now, Ian?
It's some small aeroplane flying around.
Ian, if I can ask you, obviously you became a specialist at that point. Obviously, you only have to look at your results over the years. Were you ever tempted to try and come away and do more in Europe based on the fact that you had such success with TTE?
That was always the goal. But it we did Acropolis with Subaru, which was which we got quite a good result in. And then but with TTE, it was just crazy money. Like for Safari, that we'd get a sponsor and they would also, you know, like put money into it. But now as soon as you went to Europe, it was like you're like every other Joe sitting on the shelf. So it was just crazy, crazy money to try and do that. So and it would probably take in a few years of practicing as well, you know, to get good at it. So
yeah. Is it now, do you, when you look back and you look at the obviously, you know, the Toyota thing we've just been talking about, but you've been consistently competitive in whatever you've driven. You know, obviously more recently you've been in, you know, the Hiluxes, you've been in Capris, you've been in Evos and things like that. Is there still the same sense of pride when you do the event, you know, all these years on? Because you must have done the event more than anybody now.
Probably. Okay, like with a classic, so like even with we drove like a Land Cruiser, then got a Hilux, and then now we run a Nissan pickup. Because we ended up making those, like, in our office, like we fix cars and sell motorbikes. So those were like kind of homemade, and the fact they actually worked quite well was quite satisfying. And then we built the Mustang for the classic. In those days, you could run big tires and double shocks, and you know, so some of it was advantages, some of it was not. Some of it was just because of cheap costs. And so I think we had a bad event. Then we won on the next year, and then we have like a, you know, with like a homemade car was really satisfying. And then one year we had a great fight with Stig with our Capri when we were allowed to run a Piranha. Originally allowed to run a V8 Piranha because they were made in South Africa. And then I think the last day and a half we were like fighting for seconds. I think one stage across the Titus we beat him by 3 seconds, and then coming back then we had both the same time. You know, so. So that was just like special stage rallying on dodgy tulip notes. So then at the end of the day, he ended up getting a puncture. But so to have done that was really, really good, you know, against the might of Tuttle. So
I don't know who Tuttle has driving for them these days, to be honest with you, Ian. Do you know anybody? Do you know any of their drivers, Ian?
Not at the moment, no.
Ian, I would love to get your take on, obviously, it's a subject we've been talking about quite a lot on the podcast over the last couple of weeks. The fact that Michel Mouton have been over to visit, you know, Safari, The drums are getting louder, the fact that it is coming back to WRC. Michelle Mouton was very, very quick to point out she didn't feel the route they were talking about is tough enough. What did you make of that?
You know, I mean, like, there's so many angles to this. The problem was with the reason Safari lost its WRC was it tried to compromise to go shorter for WRC and still stay the character. And, you know, whereas actually, you know, of course, hindsight's always the best thing, but it's, you know, either we should have gone bugger off to the FIA and stayed like a standalone Paris-Dakar event, or we should have done, like, you know, completely WRC and smooth, fast stages and, you know, kept all the teams happy. Whereas to try and do a compromise, we lost all the character of Safari, and then we lost the, you know, but it was rough. It was still rough, but the teams then had to build another car. So then they went anti on that. So to me, the brief for to get WRC back was that it had to be very smooth, but they could come with the same car and, you know, maybe change the suspension settings, different springs, maybe reinforce one or two mountings here and there, but they had to come with the original car. So which can happen here. It's like, you know, obviously closed roads. But then Michelle says it's too smooth. So it's, do we, you know, and obviously she has a great say in it. And but, you know, if you make it long and rough and then you get the character of a Safari back, then if the teams come and break their cars, then they'll complain and won't want to come. So it's a bit of a catch-22 to me at the moment.
Yeah, and I think you've literally just hit the nail on the head there of what we're talking about, because as you said, the teams don't want to have to develop a new car to come back to Africa. But then you've got the FIA saying something different. How do you think that the sort of spirit of Safari can be captured in a modern WRC format?
Well, I mean, you'll never get the old spirit back that, you know, everyone drove all night and, you know, all day, all night. That'll never happen. But we still have some really exciting roads and the scenery is great, you know, and there's wild animals around. You'll never find that in a, you know, in another event. I think we'd have enough of the Safari to still make it a good event. You know, like it's, you know, try and make it smooth, maybe a bit longer so people aren't crazy fast, but you know, just the scenery and, you know, just like maybe, you know, if it rains a lot it's going to be muddy, but it's like, but I don't think we need it that rough, but the teams will start to refuse to come because now they're having to make another car.
Ain't you still have any good contacts with Toyota?
not at the moment. I know Tommy Mäkinen for sure, but it's, yeah, it would be fun, that's for sure, just to help do some testing and things. So it's
well, Tommy's not averse to using people, so maybe that's an email that needs to be sent in sooner rather than later. But do you honestly see it coming back? Because obviously, you know, this has been mentioned a number of times now, and I know Ryan's just asked the question with regards to, can it be done? And you've just answered that. But do you see the desire from the, you know, from your governing body over there to bring WRC back?
But there's a big push from this side, with backing from the president. They have huge budgets. Hopefully they're spending them in the right place. but then if you'd asked me that question 4 years ago, I'd have said no. But then I think last year, one of our promoters for WRC came out and we were so lucky. It had rained a bit. The grass was green. The scenery was beautiful. There's animals around. There's a rally car driving with plumes of dust behind it. It's, you know, and he just said you'd never find this anywhere else in the world. And then he said, like, when even in a WRC do you see them going through big mud holes? And it's like it's just become too clinical. So I think with the effort and the push from the president, and a lot of people are really keen, I think there's a genuine, I think it'll come back. I mean, I certainly hope so, and certainly go on the positive side.
And would that get you back? Would you want to do it if the rally happened?
Oh yeah, for sure. We'll do it with something. Yeah, if we can be a spoilt works driver again, that's great. If not, we'll find something to do.
Sure, you've got to aim for it. You've got the current spec world car. Surely you've got to complete the set.
Well, yeah, that would be nice, but I don't know. It's, but let's I mean, just for the country, it'd be nice to get the rally back. And yeah, if we could, then it would be nice.
Do you feel that, you know, obviously yourself, and obviously we know the history of the event. Do you feel that rally could perhaps find the next Ian Duncan over in Kenya? Because obviously that's something that all these events try to do, don't they? They want to promote the sport and obviously want to find drivers. Do you see, you know, younger drivers? Do you see the desire for rally still with the younger generation over there?
So there's a couple of youngsters who certainly have talent around here. And yeah, but okay, at least when I was growing up, like you had to be, like Safari was so different from all the other rallies, you could become a Safari specialist, you know, which is what I became. And then, but I think the problem is that now, like, you know, to find someone here with the speed to keep up with those WRC things would be very hard, but it's, local conditions always favour. You know, if we understand the, you know, the terrain and things, it's always a benefit. So you could always be hopeful on that.
Fingers crossed. Well, Ian, we really do appreciate your time, and I realise it's obviously getting towards the end of the day for you, so we won't take up any more of your time, but we do thank you for your time, and fingers crossed for you, and I think for all the WRC, that we see the Safari Rally back in the World Rally Championship moving forward.
Great, yeah, thanks a lot, you all, yeah.
No worries at all. Folks, that has been the end of the podcast for this week. You know where we live now. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/Absolute Rally. And we'll be back same time, same place, your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.